Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of old, so that I may remember who I am.
And who I am is Will Bluewater. This is part two of CBD's Heal with cannabis naturopathic clinician Charmaine Bassett Trim. And her mic is off right now. I'm going to tell people about her. She has not gotten her proper due in our last broadcast. She wasn't properly introduced. But she is the branch CEO of Ajnana Kai, which is considered to be one of the foremost naturopathic clinicians and educators in the world. At the top of her sports career, Charmaine was also recognized as one of the top aerobic athletes in our country. For over 45 years, she's been intimately involved in the growth and development of the health, nutrition, and sports field. And I invite everybody to take a look at her bio. And mics are now coming open. There's one that's open, and there's another one in Colorado that's open. Mark Borcherding, the Badger, is with us. And he's not snarly yet. he's not snarly at all, yeah. I must have done something to piss him off. Oh, but by the way, folks, I want to make sure we give the proper due to the movie Thunderheart. What you hear, at the beginning of the show is a sequence from the movie Thunderheart, and it's a real statement about, why is it that Native people and Native healing techniques are such a threat, and why is there a war and a conspiracy inside the United States government specifically against our faith, which has been going on now for a long time. Anyway, turn the doctor loose. How you doing, doctor? Doctor,
release,
you know what?
The Kraken.
Oh, you know what? I had a flash of inspiration. I should have downloaded Dr. Detroit to play as my while I was introducing you, because you're so close to Detroit. That's such a cool old song from.
Yeah, I like your choice in music. You picked some good ones.
My kid, I think he was just at that age, about 10, 11, you know, when that came out, and he got such a kick out of that show. And, you know, they said they were going to do a sequel, and they did. And Dr. Detroit was a Dan Aykroyd movie, one of the best comedies you'll ever see. And you got to watch it at least once a year just for fun. Anyway, Charmaine, oh, gosh, the world's on fire.
Yeah, the world is. Things are changing pretty quickly, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, that's why we wanted to talk with you tonight. We want to get it from the horse's mouth.
Well, horse's mouth. There's a lot to be said about all of the indigenous plants, but I think the one that's really, you know, capturing the media's attention and physicians' attention, and more importantly, people who are suffering's attention, is going to be cannabis. And there's so much misinformation out there. More, you know, having been in the health food field for almost 50 years, and one of the advantages I have is, you know, we've done manufacturing and imported raw products from all around the world to bring in good quality herbs. And Dad was instrumental in setting up, you know, good manufacturing practices. And having been, you know, breastfed on that type of indoctrination, I basically look at the cannabis industry and say, this is what's missing. And I see where we're getting infiltrated by some drug companies that are, you know, isolating out CBD, which we know how important that is, absolutely important. And they're getting it from the hemp plant. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, CBDs from the hemp plant can do a lot. They absolutely can do a lot. But when you take a look at the female cannabis plant with its 580-something chemicals, each one plays an important role in the body, and synergistically together, you know, you can't really separate those little pieces apart and think that they work independently of each other. They work synergistically. And the two things that you don't get from, well, it's really a lot of things, 500 and so many other things from the hemp plant, is a flower, hopefully a mature flower, and a sugar leaf. What does that mean? That means that your trichomes, which if you look at them with a loop, a really good lighted up jeweler's loop, some of them you can even see with the bare eyes, they're so profound, they're actually crystalline structures. They actually create geometrical shapes, and I call them like the pixie dust or the fairy dust. And these get destroyed through processing and through heat. And that's what's missing off the hemp compared to the cannabis. And those are going to be what give it its aroma. And that's with any herb. The ones that have really nice aromas, they have a lot of these terpenes, a lot of these trichomes, the really pretty crystalline structures. And as we know, since as humans we are electrical in nature first, and then we become biochemical, anything that can amp up energy in the body is going to give the body more of what it needs. So these structures, these crystalline structures, they do that job. One way that people apply terpenes, these aromatic structures within the plant, the one most people are familiar with anyway, would be essential oils. But even with that, the level of the heat that they use, a lot of times will keep many of the components that we're looking for. But the second that you take anything on earth, whether it be your steak that you're going to cook tonight or your vegetable that you're going to eat, and you raise it up past about 100, sometimes it's even 118 degrees, but if you go up past 120 and you're really pushing it at about 140, you destroy the terpenes, you destroy the enzymes, the live enzymes that are in the plant, and you destroy a lot of the vitamins and a lot of the other components. So one of the things that we always take a look at when we're looking for a good quality plant, whether it be cannabis or ginkgo or ashwagandha, is what quality of plant did you start with first? That is paramount. So it's something I call QPS. Q means quality. So first and foremost, we have to start with a really good quality plant. And in order to do that, what I'm finding as I go around and talk to a lot of the different growers is that everybody's idea of clean growing is it's huge in its array of not only vastness, but what is considered by people acceptable. And my quality that I expect is I want nothing used. I don't care how well you can clean it up and flush and do all these wonderful things that, you know, horticulture has taught us to do with plants. We have to have really good soil or good water if you're doing hydroponics. That has to be paramount. And then any fertilizer or nutrient that we're using has to be totally organic and natural. And let's not abuse the word organic and natural, because that also is being abused so much. I mean, arsenic is natural and organic, so that wouldn't be so good for our plants. So the point that I'm trying to make is that that good quality plant. Another thing that's going to make a good quality plant is most of the cannabis that's on the planet presently has been grown for an elevated THC content. And they've forgotten kind of about the CBDs. That's something that's only come to the forefront in the last, CBD, when they found the CB1 and CBD receptor sites. What was that, the 80s, 90s, they were doing that? We realized that we have receptor sites throughout our whole body for that, and that's when it really started coming to the forefront. But the THC is what people were growing the plant for, because they wanted the psychoactive effect from it. And not to downplay the psychoactive effect, because there's many healing benefits to that. But, again, once you take a product, let's say, starting quality, we're starting with that cue, and you're looking at, okay, let's look at the percentage of THC. Oh, this plant, wow, 24% THC. CBD, 1%. CBN, 0.5%. And then it goes through, the whole chemical breakdown, and you're seeing that, okay, we don't have the CBDs where we need them to be. We don't have any of the cannabinoids where they need to be for the real healing effect. So having said that, people are now getting into growing and hybriding their plants so that we have a higher CBD content, which is really, really important. But what it looks like, and a lot of times we mix and match our plants to come up with a really good tincture, because, what's available is the only thing you can get your hands on. And although we have some really great growers that I work with that have been growing for 35 years and are just, they grow everything so clean and so meticulously, but they, again, were growing for the THC. They're just now getting on the CBD bandwagon. Is that where we're seeing the best healing result is when you see a 1-to-1 ratio of CBD to THC. So a lot of times when we're making that raw tincture, which really needs to be the basis for all the healing, and then everything else should come after that. Dr. Courtney, who is also part of our church, his research and the people that are really paying attention, which is a very small group of people, will tell you that he was having his patients that were, having incredible amounts of seizures, cancer, whatever, they would have to juice between 1 and 2 plants a day to get the amount of CBDs and other components in the plant to turn around and cure these diseases. Well, now with growing, because the plants he was finding at that point were a 1% CBD content. So as we raise that up, so if you have something that's a 2% CBD, then you'd only need 1 plant a day. If you have something that's a 4% CBD, you only need 1/8 of a plant a day. So if we get up to the 15%, like where most of the plants contain in THC, it takes a heck of a lot less, because his research showed that you need between 450 milligrams a day, which is about a 1-ounce bottle, if you concentrate your stuff properly. That's 450 milligrams of a 1% tincture. So as we move the tinctures up, the people need less medicine to get the same job done. So that's going to be quality. So the things that we're looking for in quality is, how is this plant grown? Is it hopefully a non-GMO seed? Because unfortunately, GMO seeds, most people don't even know if they're even getting a GMO seed. It's pretty hard to do. It takes a lot of money to do the research, and they have become prevalent. And those are just, that's blasphemy, starting with a GMO seed. So first you've got to have that really nice seed, and then you're looking at, can this plant produce close to a 1-to-1 ratio with the CBD and the THC? Are you going to take it to full maturity, which is, on some of the plants, some of the strains, it's an 80-day or 78-day maturation for the plant, and then you harvest that plant. The other thing that we're finding is mold. And this is really, really bad. We're finding that a lot of people will, because of the way that they're growing their plants, end up with a mold problem, and then they don't want to get rid of that whole plant that they just, you know, brought up from seed or cloning or whatever they may have done. But they also may get the mold after they harvest because they don't dry the stuff out properly. This is a huge problem. So we have to look for, you know, the herbicides and the pesticides and all these things that we don't want in it. And we have to look for mold, which is one of the biggest overlooked things right now. And I actually have patients that tell me, you know what, the product I get from you doesn't get me sick. And I said, well, probably it was, you know, GMO, herbicides and pesticides, or mold, or any combination of those things. So we have to take a look at that quality. That's going to be the number one thing. Then the second step is the P, and that's going to be processing. So we have to look at how it's being processed. So let's just talk for a second about Rick Simpson oil, because he's really gained a lot of attention in the field for curing cancer. And I watched his first video, and luckily it has changed some. And his first video was, you know, one of those five-gallon buckets that you can get at Home Depot that are plastic that you can mix things in or whatever you're doing. And he takes and he puts in, you know, he fills that bucket up with his cannabis. And he does use cannabis, so that part's good. And then he pours in isopropyl alcohol. And then he takes a wooden stick and he kind of just smashes it all up, and he does this for, I don't know, 5 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever. And then he's going to proceed to take that liquid, pour it off into a Teflon rice cooker, and boil off all the isopropyl. Then he's going to take that concentrated cannabis, and he's going to put it into a plastic syringe. So, step number one, isopropyl alcohol. Okay, now he's moved to ethanol and better forms of alcohol. A lot of people are using glycerin to extract their product out of the plant. And yes, they will get a lot of product, a lot of the essential chemicals that make up the plant, but they're not going to get as much as you would with alcohol. That's why traditionally herbologists since the beginning of time have used alcohol for extracts. You're just going to get more of the chemicals that you want for the healing from the plant from an alcohol tincture. So he moved to an ethanol, which was a good idea, and that's fine. But the problem is that alcohol in that plant and those terpenes in that plant are going to suck the plastic out of that container. Those synthetic estrogens are what get people sick. In fact, I don't really know anybody that's overweight from overeating. I'm going to tell you only 1% of the population is overweight from overeating. The rest of the population is overweight because they're overtoxic, a lot of it with the synthetic estrogens. And it's self-perpetuating. The more of these synthetic estrogens you have in your body, they're called environmental endocrine disruptors. They're called xenobiotics. There's a lot of different names for them, but what they do is they mimic estrogen, and they actually clog up the receptor sites, and they tell your body to produce fat. And then each of your fat cells tells your body to produce fat, so it's self-perpetuating. So a big problem with the product that we're stirring in a plastic bucket and pulling out those endocrine disruptors. Now we're going to take it, we're going to put it into, you know, a Teflon rice cooker, which we know that Teflon works by gassing off. That's why nothing sticks to it. And I understand as you start concentrating the stuff into that gooey paste, the nonstick, you know, it makes life a lot easier, but it really, as far as how we're going to process for purity, you can just throw that right out the window there. You're putting that poisonous gas into the remaining product. Then he goes to a high heat. So he's going to boiling, and I don't have my Google in front of me, but what is boiling? 200 degrees?
212 at sea level.
Yeah, yeah. So I always like to round things off, so I would say 200. That's the way my body does math. My brain does math. So he's boiling off at, you know, 212. So we already know at that point he's lost 95% of the medicine at that temperature. 95% of the medicine. Then he takes and he pulls it into a plastic syringe. So once again, you've got this wonderful plant that's fantastic at detoxing, and you're putting it in plastic. So just like it would detox us, it's going to pull, once again, those synthetic estrogens into that product. And then at the end of it, he goes, yes, then a half a green a day should even cure the most serious of cancers in 3 months. Well, you know why he's getting results? It's because he psychoactivated that plant. And when you psychoactivate a plant, you're going to get that high from it, and that high with that concentration is going to put you into a parasympathetic response. Why is that important? Well, that's the only way the body can rest, repair, regenerate. You have to be able to get into parasympathetic. That's getting into like a deep delta sleep, which most people don't do. So the number one cause of aging and of disease processes is not getting into a deep delta sleep. That frequency, that deep delta frequency, which is between like a 0.5 and a 4 hertz cycles per second, opens up all the detox channels in the brain so that the brain can actually flush out all the poisons from it. And we're actually finding with Alzheimer's research and dementia and some of these, you know, brain diseases that these people never get into that deep sleep. So the channels for detox never open up, and then those toxins accumulate in the brain, and then we end up with the Alzheimer's, you know, the amyloid plaques and all these other things. So when you take something like the RSO, the Rick Simpson oil, you're going to get into a deep sleep. That's one thing that we can guarantee you. It's going to knock you out. These people sleep a lot, but during that period of sleep, which if they end up with a serious disease like cancer, all these seizures, you just know that they could have only got there if they never get into a deep sleep. They never got into that parasympathetic. So this is the benefit of his product. This is what it's doing, and you're still getting 5% of the medicine. So 5% of something is better than nothing, and it tells you how powerful this medicine is. But my whole thing is, all the companies that I see out there that are providing tinctures, and it's starting to happen, it's starting to change, that are producing the waxes and the shatters and are doing things that can be psychoactivated as well as all the medicines. Like we have a chocolate bar that's gluten-free and sugar-free because we know that the sugar, you know, 1 teaspoon of sugar suppresses the immune system for at least 8 hours. Sugar feeds cancer. You can't give sick people sugar. So we've got this really wonderful sugar-free chocolate, gluten-free chocolate. But it's cooked at about 110 degrees. So you've got all the medicine. So you take and you let that chocolate dissolve in your mouth, and you can actually absorb some of that because of the fatty acids in the plant actually through the oral cavity and bypass digestion. Most edibles do not work on super sick people because their digestion is so bad. So that's also where, even though a lot of people just hate the ethanol, but if you take that raw tincture, which means you're starting off with your good quality plant and you process it properly because it's raw, and it's with the ethanol because it extracts the most, you can actually absorb most of that through your mouth and stomach and bypass digestion. That's why those raw tinctures work so good.
Cannabis suppositories. Cannabis suppositories.
Yep, suppositories would work really, really well. But again, you know, what quality product? I find that a lot of the suppositories that I've seen, that they're actually using propylene glycol, and that's actually radiator fluid. And just like a lot of the vape pens that are pre-packed, that you can actually see the smoke come out, I found propylene glycol in a lot of those. So just have to, again, pay attention. But, yeah, suppository would absolutely work wonderfully. There's no question about it. Again, we just have to look at, you know, what quality of plant did they start with? You know, where are their percentages at? Was it a mature leaf? Hopefully it was the female cannabis plant with the terpenes. And then hopefully they don't use something like propylene glycol, as what holds it all together for the suppository. So, yeah, I think almost making your own might be a better way to go with that. But digestion gets to be a problem. So for people that have digestive issues, which is pretty much anybody that's sick, I've never tested anybody that's not sick or that is sick that doesn't have digestive issues. So, yeah, suppository, awesome, great, terrific, wonderful. But there also is a way, and what I like about things like vaporizing or controlling the temperature, I think like a rig that's water, like a water pipe, that has like a titanium or quartz crystal or a nail out of titanium that you heat it up with the MAP gas, and then we take our infrared thermometer and we test it so we get, only get it to around 200. That way we're getting about 85% of the medicine. You can find your dose right then and there. Okay, so you can alleviate the pain or get to sleep or whatever it is you're trying to do. The problem with that is once you decarboxylate, you only get 10% of the medicine of whatever it is you're delivering. So the lower the heat is, you may have to take a few more hits to get you where you're trying to go, but controlling that temperature when you're vaporizing will allow you to get more of the medicine that's actually going to rebuild, regenerate, and heal the body. So we like to start with the raw tincture in an alcohol base, or the other school of thought is the critical extraction. That's amazing. But the thing with the critical extraction, that's going to concentrate about 20 to 1. You got to realize that if you're getting something that's 20 times more concentrated, you're going to be paying for that too. The equipment's expensive, and it takes a lot more product to get to where you have to go, so there is a price tag attached to that. And that's my other big complaint is, most people are growing for the people that still want the THC, that still want the high, and yes, there's a lot of healing that can still be done with that, like we said with the Rick Simpson. But at the end of the day, if you're really trying to reverse these huge diseases, we really need that medicine. So the supercritical is the best there is out there. It does keep all the fatty acids intact, which is, those are super important. Those lipids for healing is almost untouchable, and the terpenes. So the CO2 extractions are going to be the best, but almost all the CO2 tinctures or whatever form you're getting in and that I've seen on the market is coming from industrial hemp, where they've increased the CBD quality through hybridization. So I'm not negating and saying that those don't work. I'm just saying that there's no way that's going to ever compare to a fully matured trichome-laden cannabis plant that, you know, is trying to get that one-to-one ratio with the CBDs to the THC, which is, you know, I was really happy to see that Dr. Courtney came to the same conclusion I did. I was doing it through clinical data and research and doing, you know, blood draws and different diagnostics that we have to kind of see where the results were coming from. And that one-to-one ratio seems to be the magic click there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you're talking about boiling something. To make a tincture, you ought to be able to bake break the cannabis up real well and bake it, and just make sure you know that you've got it. Got a laser, you know, thermometer, so you know what temperatures you're dealing with. But do we lose you, Charmaine?
No, I'm right here. I'm listening to you.
Oh, okay.
I'm hearing what you're saying, but I'm saying take it raw. Do it raw. Do whatever you're going to do and do it with it raw. Or there is an advantage to a little bit of heat because, like, for instance, the CBN, which is actually I like that molecule as much as I like the CBD because that CBN underlying cause of most cancers is going to be viral or fungal infection that you've had for a prolonged period of time that breaks down the immune system. In fact, we can take a look at a cancer cell, put it on a slide, and stick it under a microscope, and it's, you know, depending on what solution you use to stain it, can look either like a virus or a fungal. And that CBN is instrumental for knocking down the fungal burden or the viral burden. So that takes a little bit of heat. You got to get to about 110 for that. So there is some advantage to heating it up to that sweet spot. The problem is once you get that psychotropic effect, you're going to limit the person's ability to actually get the amount of milligrams that they need to really, you know, heal from a deep level, from a cellular level. Because think about it. Mama's breast milk has cannabis in it. It has, you know, the CBD and the THC in it. Why is that? You know, you're taking a baby that starts, you know, two cells that make an entire human being. So once the baby comes out of mama and starts drinking the breast milk, the amount of growth that happens in that hopefully couple years of breastfeeding is really what, if you think about it that way, you can really understand why this plant works so well. It's going to help regenerate everything, and it's going to keep this baby and this body as clean as it can be. So, you know, you want those factors in there. So that's where I'm saying we're missing the boat, and that's where I'm saying, oh, yeah, you know, this is CO2 extracted. It comes from UK. You know, we have to import. They can grow hemp. We can't. You know, we can have the hemp. We just can't grow it. It's like, really? That's so crazy. But when you see these pharmaceutical extracts coming from, you know, UK, they're going to say right on it, you know, from hemp, because that's going to be legal for everybody to get unless you're in certain states. But the beauty of us being Oklava is what? What's the beauty of Oklava and our church members? This is our sacrament. It's our sacrament. Yeah. And as our sacrament, and as also being a medicine woman, one of the tools that we use for healing, I mean, we're actually able to provide for anybody, anywhere, this incredible medicine. I mean, I can't tell you how many people have walked in to Anyana Kai, to my church, you know, naturopathic clinic, and cried because they knew this was helping it. You know, they were getting it black market, you know, and they were very concerned about, you know, the liability that came along with that. And to be able to have these medicines, you know, as an Oklava church member is something that's very profound. So that's how we're able to produce, you know, and make available these sacraments for people that are sick and in need and give them the full cannabis. They don't have to just deal with the hemp tinctures. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, Charmaine, I had a question on it, though. that I was wondering, has anybody done any work on taking and doing the cannabis and doing homeopathy on it? Because if you do that, if it worked, and a lot of stuff does seem to work that way, then there wouldn't be actually any, by the time you do the homeopathy right, there isn't any actual matter left in there from the cannabis to detect, and you could just put it out like, you know, spirit water or something. And
you know, I get that, and you know, you're right. I am a doctor of homeopathy, and I actually teach classes, and I have a university, and we teach homeopathy, and I am a, you know, it's a big part of my practice are homeopathic remedies, and I'm a huge advocate of making homeopathic remedies. And here's the thing, is I absolutely think that will work. But I also know that in some instances, there's something called orthomolecular medicine, where we know that once a person is sick, you also need the bricks and the mortar. You still need the mother at certain milligrams. So I try to hit it from all angles. I don't know that I'd be real comfortable with a cancer person or someone that's seizing so many times a day when I know that I'm giving them this tincture that I can provide for them legally, safely. I know it's a good product. Their seizures stop or are totally minimalized, you know, after their first dose, and if they run out, they come back. I don't know that I would feel comfortable not giving them enough of the mother. I do believe that the plants and our receptor sites play a role. I do use homeopathy with everything that I do. So, yeah, that's a viable option, absolutely. And I think that that's going to be a huge market. Yeah, I think you're right on.
Well, I was just thinking it solves a couple of problems. One is not just the, you know, the various legal issues, but just, you know, as more, the reason I'm bringing it up is because also because as more and more people want to gain access to something like this, then, you know, the cost for them is going to go up, and then so the homeopathy might help with the cost possibly too.
Absolutely. No, or maybe will, but here's my whole,
what you can do is a combination of both.
Right.
Possibly
right.
Too.
Oh, absolutely, and that's what I do. But here's the thing, is my whole point is no, you're going to see the cost of cannabis come down. Because
yeah.
Cannabis is going to end up being like every other healing herb on the planet, and
right.
That's what it has to do, okay? It has to do that. And I will tell you that the group that I'm working with in my area, we've got about 15 growers that have come together, and they are such, they're these beautiful young kids, and they call themselves the Free Church, and they have no desire or care about money. All they care about is getting the medicine out to the planet, even if it means at a loss. I'm trying to tell them, no, we still have to, you have to have money to keep your doors open, so let's not put that out there. But, you know, our goal is to make, you know, that 450-milliliter bottle, which is a one-ounce bottle of tincture, the same price as any other really powerful tincture that we have at our Bassett's Health Foods, which we've had for almost 50 years. So if I walk into Bassett's Health Foods and I look at, I think we have like 30,000 items in our store, and I walk down the aisle and I pick up mistletoe, and that mistletoe for that one-ounce bottle is going to cost me about $35. That's a pretty good price point for a month's supply. That's what we're shooting for, and we're pretty close to that right now. You know, with our one-to-one CBD to THC, with our ethanol extract, so we're getting a really nice high percentage in there. We're going $47.50. So that's amazing. That's amazing for what you're getting. And that price is going to do nothing but come down. And we're really working in that. As we get more growers doing it, as we're able to harvest our own seeds and do our own plants and get the cloning down, we're actually able to pass this price on so that it can be considered, which is what it should be and which is what it was until the government interfered. This is a plant. This is an earth-based sacrament that has been on the planet to help heal people. That's why we have receptor sites in our body, and that's kind of my goal. Is I want to see it to be this. I want to be able to walk into any health food store on the planet and be able to pick up cannabis tincture with a, you know, CBD, a nice concentration of CBDs and THC, and then of course homeopathy. Same thing. I'd like to see the homeopathic form as well, because again, like you said, when you do a combination of those two, there's a lot to be said for that. Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, the other thing, too, is, you know, there are more and more places where people are, they can grow stuff, too. So another thing that you might look at is putting together something like a pamphlet booklet, you know, where they can grow something and, you know, like you said, use it raw or whatever. That'd be the easiest. But, you know, just a simple thing to where people can get some decent seeds and a little pamphlet that tells them, you know, how to grow it maybe and kind of what how to harvest it. Just a, you know, just a simple little thing like that. There might be more and more people wanting or looking for something like that too.
You know, I like in the beginning of Ed Rosenthal's book how he actually, you know, tells people it's like tomatoes, you know? And, you know, isn't that the dang truth? It's like, you know, people growing their own tomatoes didn't take away from the amount that are sold in stores or in, you know, your vegetable fruit stands on the side of the road. And I totally agree with you. I think that people having their own gardens and producing their own crops, there is nothing like going out in your own garden and picking your own tomato. There's nothing like that, yeah. You know, because you helped. You know, I consider us humans as the guardians of everything on earth, and to believe as in God in all life matters, from plants to all animals, it's our responsibility to make sure it's done right. And there's nothing better than getting your hands dirty and getting them in the earth and growing your own products. Absolutely wonderful. You know, and we're seeing more and more people do that, and you're right. So we do have, I actually teach, second Monday of every month, I teach a class on cannabis. And it's open to the general public, and it's to educate them on how to not hurt your lungs with smoking and how to control temperatures and what milligrams are and what doses to take and how to grow your own and all of that sort of stuff. And it's really wonderful because you're right. A lot more people are just going to grow their own. And that's really where they're going to make the savings, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, it also is a, by doing that, it's kind of like you heal yourself and then you're helping the planet and you set up a different relationship with everything too. And it's kind of like when I grow our garden, you know, I make a deal with the plants, you know. I take care of the plants and then I take care of their children and their children's children and they take care of me.
And that's the way it's supposed to be. And that's a big part of what I think is missing here is that connection. But I see that really turning around. I mean, almost everybody that comes through on Yanakai, it has their own garden on some level. In fact, we kind of all share in co-op. You know, I'm growing peppers and tomatoes this year, and you're growing broccoli and whatever. And then we share our harvest together. And there's a lot of people that are doing community gardens in our area too. So, I mean, yeah, this type of stuff has really taken off. I mean, another thing that we started delving into is trying to get some of the psilocybins and some of the peyotes to come up because, you know, we're looking at research that's, you know, long in coming. I mean, we're talking about it's been around since the 60s. Where, you know, small doses of, like, psilocybin mushrooms can actually regenerate brain tissue and nerve tissue and can have wonderful healing effects. You don't have to go to the psychoactive side of it to get these benefits for people that really don't want to do that. But then at the same time, for people that want to, you know, don't look behind the curtain, you know, and want to unplug from the matrix and really connect to, you know, all that we are here from, you know, from the planet to the stars to, you know, the cosmos and really get connected with the truth. You know, some people call it hallucinating, but it's not. Psychoactivity from plants, what it does is it connects you to the collective consciousness grid and allows you to access the truth. So there are people that do want that spiritual experience as well. And, I mean, look at Linda and James. They would go into prisons and take the most hardened, you know, criminals and put them through one peyote ceremony and their lives were changed forever. It's so powerful. You know, lifetime heroin addicts, one spiritual experience on peyote and they're no longer an addict. I mean, this stuff is very powerful. So I love the fact
there's a few people I can think of that are running the show on the planet that we should figure out how to get some of it into them.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is that I have more people wake up.
Doing.
Well, and don't you feel that that's part of the cannabis movement? That the people that have been doing it for years, that it's a lot more. If you really truly are the guardian of the planet and you really truly look at plants the way that you just explained, that connection that's there is remarkable. There's no way that you can explain it unless you've experienced it. But I really believe that the people that are into the cannabis movement, they understand this connection and the importance of it. You know, it's kind of like the hippie era all over again, you know, love, peace, and let's get this right type of thing.
Yeah.
Plus, so I think people just want to feel better. I mean, I had a kid. He's I think he just turned 30 this past week, and he was a really good ball player, and he was a genius in math. I mean, he got really nice big scholarships, got a couple really good degrees, and he's been in pain his whole entire life. And you know, because of legalities, he wasn't willing to participate in the cannabis. But when he had the cannabis into his routine, I mean, he comes up to me, he goes, do you have any idea, in tears, what it's like to be out of pain for the first time in my entire life? And he was 30 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And I see this so much. I see this every day, in fact. And it's really funny because you would think there's still a lot, so much stigmatism attached to, you know, the psychoactive side of it. But I got to tell you, I was just at this huge conference for Microcurrent, where I was one of the keynote speakers, where we're going to be second responders for any emergency situation to try to show people how we can heal people with nothing but frequency. You know, and the medicine's been around since, you know, the invention of electricity. But what was really cool is when, you know, I brought up cannabis and its healing benefits. I mean, even, you know, this the group that I have and work with over there, a lot of them are, you know, 80, 90, 100 years old. And you know that they even get it. And so I figure if they get it, you know, anybody can get it. Now, mind you, they're into alternative health, but, I mean, they were willing to, they want to participate in this. So
well,
it's awesome.
You know, the frequency thing you're talking about, there was, I don't know how many years ago, but DARPA, the government DARPA program, they actually had something set up where they could take and record the frequency of, you know, herb or whatever, digitize it, put it on a disc, and email it somewhere.
Yeah, we do all that. Radionics.
Play
that's
it
called
back
Radionics.
Out.
Yeah, that's Radionics. Yeah, I've been
like
playing. They call me Go-Go Gadget Girl. Yeah, Go-Go Gadget Girl. So I basically can actually not even have to put it on a disc. I can actually, once I have you downloaded into my quantum computer, I can actually find you anywhere in the world or anywhere in the universe, and I can actually download whatever it is that your body is telling me that it needs at the time on a frequency level. Now, it's 500 times more effective if you're hooked up to the machine, but, I mean, that's what one of the things I was doing over at Anyanakai today. I was working with my quantum computer because we can actually create at a quantum level, and it's absolutely amazing what we do with energy medicine now. And so that's what's important about the plants, and that's what's important with homeopathy. It's like I said, those terpenes, the importance of those terpenes being on the plant is it's amplifying frequency. And truly, that's what life is all about, first and foremost, is getting frequency to all your cells in the body. Because what we find is, you know, you have 770 trillion cells that have to communicate. 700 trillion of those are probiotics that you live in a symbiotic relationship with. And when any of those get out of balance, for instance, if you are a craver of sweets and carbohydrates, you will eat those, and what you will be doing is you will be feeding or overfeeding or abusing the probiotic called candida. So candida is not bad, but a candida overgrowth is. In fact, having a candida growth for long periods of time is, again, an underlying cause of cancer. So, you know, as the guardian of everything on the planet, including our own body, you know, what we can control is what we put in our mouth and what we put on our body. And so if we're going to be eating all the carbohydrates and the sugars, and then so we're feeding this candida, and so pretty soon it's like your next-door neighbor standing on your porch and going, okay, now my whole yard, and I'm up to your door is mine, and I'm coming inside your house next. And then the war begins. And so this starts happening all throughout the body, and now we don't have clear communications. We have people that are bullies. But the bottom line, the reason why this gets out of control is because we weren't listening to our bodies and we were putting the wrong frequencies in. So what we're finding is with this energy medicine and with this quantum medicine and with using plants that are grown properly, the frequencies that they give off are really what's creating the healing. And filling up those receptor sites and the signal transduction that it creates. I mean, I don't know if you saw the movie Avatar, and then you have Sigourney Weaver, who's down, and she's looking at this life force in the plants, and she's talking about signal transduction. Well, that is actually really happening all the time.
Yeah.
You take something like a bacteria. This is why antibiotics are so bad. So you go into a hospital, and they see that you have an infection. So the first thing they're going to do is they're going to put you on an antibiotic. But the second that antibiotic is administered to that person, that bacteria is so smart, it actually has something like a sub pump where it flushes flushes everything out of the cell so nothing more can come in. Then it also has a mechanism of action where it'll fill up all the receptor sites so it can't receive any more information. And it has 7 really cool things like that it does like that. But through signal transduction, it can communicate for 3 miles to all the other bacteria on the planet, which is why antibiotics don't work and why we have to keep going for stronger and stronger ones, which is why hospitals, I call them MRSA wards, I call them sick rooms, avoid the hospital like the plague. They actually have bacteria that can live in chlorine and not die because it's such a superbug because of how we've abused these antibiotics. In fact, the pharmaceutical companies are no longer going to be manufacturing pharmaceuticals. They only want to manufacture pharmaceuticals that you have to be on every day, like cholesterol or blood pressure med or something of a diabetes med, and because they know that they can't keep up with the resistance to antibiotics. They can't keep up with that research. So in about 10 years from now, there's not going to be any more antibiotics, which means people need to come up with natural ways to handle this. And see, that's one of the beautiful things with the cannabis plant. What it does for the immune system is phenomenal. That's one of its biggest mechanisms of action, is what it does for the immune system is just, you know, it's, we got your echinacea, your golden seal, and you got your cannabis. I mean, these are, you know, just top healers. You have your astragalus, that's another good one. And so these are, you know, nature's antibiotics, colloidal silver that's manufactured properly. And, you know, so we've got the signal transduction going on, and that's where with energy medicine, which homeopathy was the first energy medicine on the planet. And when I try to explain to people, okay, how do I explain homeopathic medicine where like cures like and less is more? The more it's diluted, the stronger it is. And I finally came up with a great analogy. And it looks something like this. So you've got 770 trillion cells, and I've got this apple in my hand. And there's a chemical in there called malic acid that I need for Krebs cycle, for energy, for detoxing. So that malic acid, which is maybe, you know, I don't know how many grams in that apple, but a minute amount, has to get to 770 trillion cells. So it's through signal transduction, we want to be able to communicate this energy, this frequency to every single cell. It would have to be 1/770 of the malic acid to get to your cells. That's what homeopathy is. It's actually cell talk. It's actually taking that whatever it is that we're trying to get, the malic acid from the apple, to every cell. So homeopathy makes it so it bypasses digestion, it bypasses the body having to break everything down, puts everything into its most basic cell form so it can be taken up by the cell individually. That's signal transduction. So that's why the energy medicine works so well, is we're able to actually get it so it can communicate to all cells without interference. Because with a lot of my microcurrent devices I use, when I take a look at, you know, the feedback loop, which tells me how much of this energy the person can actually obtain, okay, is a lot of people can't even receive the energy because they have so much inflammation. They have so many toxins floating around in the body. And speaking to that point, we have now realized that 95% of everything that ails you is due to environmental toxins.
Yep.
Yeah. It's due to environmental toxins. So that's the one thing I'm going to say is a little bit of a precaution if you're going to start using, you know, these raw CBDs. They're so powerful. You'll probably get worse before you get better unless you figure out your dose or take some extra reduced glutathione or vitamin C or alpha-lipoic so that you can bind up these toxins and get them out. You'll get like a Herxheimer response.
You get a flood, traffic jam, right?
Yeah, you're just going to start detoxing. I hope you're supporting your liver.
Too.
What's that?
People with the Rife machines, they were having that problem too, is because they would, you know, they'd tell them use it and then tell them, oh, just do a little bit and a little bit. A lot of these people would be doing it 5-10 times a day, and
right.
Their body couldn't flush it out fast enough.
Well, and here's the thing is I've been actually using Rife frequencies, you know, I have had probably 15 different machines. I've retired more machines than most people will ever hope to earn and hold in their life. But the problem with the Rife machine is this, and I do use Rife frequencies, but I use them differently. Rife was really able to break down and isolate. He was the first person to really say the frequency of cancer is this, the frequency of herpes is this. But one thing that he also did is he also realized how to open up detox pathways, and nobody really ever talked about that much. They're just starting to. But as with Tesla and as with Rife, and as with Wilhelm Reich, Oregon Energy, is the technology at the time did not allow them to deliver those frequencies without doing any harm. And what I mean by that is any time that you use over 500 microamps, which would be called microcurrent, anything under 500 microamps is called microcurrent, is you're going to actually gas off the hydrogen, which will burn the cell, and you're going to actually rape the ATP. So we did some damage with those machines. Now, let's say you're facing cancer. Okay, and that's all that was there? Yeah, we used the Rife machines. But now because of our understanding of technology and coming up with a computer chip and being able to drive things through that, you know, that software and that hardware that we have and down-regulating the amps to under 400 microamps, we're actually able to deliver those frequencies and actually generate at least 5 to 6 times more ATP. So we're actually building up the mitochondrial function. We're actually building up the body's cellular energy at the same time we're eliminating a virus or opening up a detox pathway or helping whatever it is we're trying to do. If you can think of it, we have a frequency for it now. It's pretty amazing, really.
Yeah. Have you checked out or know anything about? I remember reading something about I think it was about 380 nanometer light communication, photonic light communication network in the body. And
I use photo lights for a lot of different things. I do something called neurofeedback. And neurofeedback, what I do that's really unusual, there's only a handful of us in the world that do this, is we do something called a brain map first. The reason why that's important is in the neurosciences, which I'm a neuroscientist as well, in the neurosciences, we used to say, okay, if you have insomnia, you're going to hook up in this spot and you're going to use these frequencies. Well, what we realized with brain mapping is there are no two brains that are the same. So, you know, maybe you suffer depression or anxiety, but I can show you that your depression or anxiety and or, because you can have both at the same time, depression is basically your brain is out of gas. There's no fuel in the tank. That's depression. Anxiety is you have too much of something, and usually it's a toxic burden, or you've had physical damage. But what we can do is we can actually map your brain through the 10-20 method, and we can see specifically what frequencies your body has running too high, which would be the equivalent of your car's in neutral and your gas pedal is floored, so you're going nowhere really fast and you're burning up a lot of stuff, or you're running really, really low, there's no gas in the tank at all, so you can't even turn on the car. And then what we do is we take those frequencies and we send them back into the brain. So let's think about this for a second. So I get a lot of these allopathic doctors that tell me, oh, you know, neurofeedback and microcurrent. I'm like, wait a second. What do you think an EKG is? That's microcurrent. But the differences of what we do is once we see, we take a look at that heart rate variable and we see where the problem's at in the synovial, diastolic, whatever, then we just download that frequency back in because that's what's missing. And then after you do this for a while, it's training, okay? It's through training. The brain will pick up these frequencies, and it will understand them. So what we use is we do five different technologies after we brain map you to see what your body is calling for. And then independent to the left and right side, which is something nobody else does, we can actually say what needs to come up and what needs to come down. So we send that back in with microcurrent, very specific frequencies to 1 nanometer of a bandwidth. To just one bandwidth, to a 0.01 frequency, we can do it. That's how specific it is. Then we can also do something called operant conditioning. Operant conditioning, you know, Pavlov's dog, you ring the bell, he salivates. That's going to be condition response. Operant conditioning is you ride a bike because you love it, and even though you fall off, you get back on again because riding a bike is so much fun. So we've realized that the more somebody enjoys something, the more they're going to do it. So we pick a movie, or you pick the movie, something that you really, really like that's joyful for you, because we know that if we can't get you into conscious thinking, which only happens about 5% of the day, the rest is subconscious, 95%, which is programmed, we got to get you up into your frontal lobes. So we can get you to watch a movie that you like. Okay, what we do is we actually have a stop and start feature or a fade, which means this has nothing to do with what you're trying to do consciously except for enjoy yourself. That's your main goal. While you're watching this movie, it will stop and start as the brain is understanding and picking up this information that we're downloading and be the equivalent to lifting weights at the gym. So the more we do this, the more the brain picks it up. We also use binaural beats, okay, but we also use photolight stim. So we're going to take those glasses, but we can work the left eye independently of the right. So we can control the hertz, the cycles per second. Why is that important? I told you, people that are sick don't get into delta. That's going to be between 0.5 and 4 hertz. So what I'm going to do, if I see that they've got, you know, a lot of brain damage in the frontal lobe and they're not getting into delta, it looks like they've had some physical trauma, maybe some mold poisoning, whatever may be the case, their hypothalamus is downregulated, they need that frequency. So I'm going to bring the delta up because they need more delta, but they're also running high beta, which is going to be up to 36 hertz. So I'm going to lower that down independently right and left side. So the glasses are going to cycle. They're going to actually flash at very specific times per second, which is what a hertz is. Like I said, delta is between 0.5 and 4 hertz, so, you know, 4 times a second. And then delta is also the color green, where theta is the color blue. So I put the blue glasses on if I'm trying to get more theta, and I'm going to cycle that. Theta is going to be from 4 to 8. Okay, and I'm going to cycle that many cycles per second. So we're using many different modalities simultaneously to retrain the brain. And once the brain figures it out, the rest of the body follows. And I will tell you that I don't care what ailment you have, after 5 sessions, 99% of the people feel a difference. It's amazing, the frequency therapy. But I also use photolight stim, where I control the nanogram for anything that you want to do on the body. So I have huge panels that we put over the whole body that we combine with the microcurrent. And, you know, there's actually nanograms out there right now. I'm talking with a guy from Czechoslovakia, and he is actually working with me because he has been able, with specific nanograms, to regenerate kidneys and teeth in 2 weeks. Brand new. Talking about photolite stem. I think that masters the plan right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, we combine light therapy and everything we do where we control the hertz, we control the nanometers, and we control the color. And in using those three concepts, we can elicit profound differences because the thing is the LED is such a new concept on the planet that the cells all look at it and they get very excited about it because it's something new and it really – and so when you're looking – let's just go back to the neural feedback. So when you're looking at the neural feedback with the lights create an instant – adaptation. But the microcurrent delivering the actual frequency is what actually regenerates and makes it happen. So that would be the equivalent of like what we were talking about, having the raw cannabis, the mother, versus having the homeopathic frequency. And when you combine those two aspects together, that's when you really see the profound and lasting results. Now with neurofeedback, after we get your brain tuned up is what we call it, the equivalent to getting you in shape at the gym, we can actually test you 30 years later, and unless you have not had, you know, if you go out and have a car accident and beat yourself up pretty bad or get poisoned with some methane or something like this, you know, you're going to see the damage. But if none of that happens, we can test you 30 years later, and those results will still be there. How about that?
Wow.
And we can actually show with cannabis. Like, I can also show you functionally with using different substances, how your brain responds and then how the body responds because of the information the brain's getting. That's what we do with the quantum computers right now. It's phenomenal.
Have you ever heard of curcumin, skullcap, and cannabis being called the holy trinity of pain relief?
No, but I can see why they would be. Absolutely.
I ran across as a Catholic sister apparently at their convent, that's what they make. They make it their own, and they're a bunch of sisters, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, no, I can see where that would absolutely work, and I do believe there's a reason why our health food store has 30,000 items. They all work. They don't work for everybody. And I believe that anybody just thinks that once there's a reason why Mother Earth provides us with such a variety. They all play a role, you know. And I think when you combine, that's why I like to use the cannabis instead of the hemp, because synergistically you get so many different chemical compositions that are working together. You just can't beat that. And if you throw something else in with it, like I'm going to say, if you're in pain, we already know that you don't have enough omega-3s. Because there's something called the arachidonic cascade. Most people have heard of the LOX and the COX pathway. That's why you take NSAIDs, you know, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. They block the COX and the LOX pathway. But we know that the reason why that actually happens to begin with is that you don't have enough omega-3s. They used to be in our diet at a 1-to-1. Some instances up as much to a 40-to-1 concentration to the other omega essential fatty acids. So the problem is when, because our food has been so depleted of this omega-3, we are automatically in the arachidonic cascade, so it means the inflammatory pathways have already been turned on. So, you know, if I take someone that I know has a disease, which all diseases of modern times are based on inflammation for a long period of time, there's other things I'm going to want to put with their protocol to help provide some of the missing links that got them there to begin with. And that's where naturopathic is different than allopathic, and that's what I don't like about what's happening with cannabis, is the people that are kind of running the show right now are the ones that have that allopathic indoctrination, and they just want to see the CBD in lieu of everything else. And that's I just always see that as being a mistake. That's not what nature offers in its bounty. And that's why, you know, every area has plants that are seasonal, you know, and there's a reason, because each one of those offers something different that is absolutely necessary for health. This monoculture and this, you know, going into your grocery store and you can find five vegetables, you know, and two kinds of meat, I mean, this is a problem. And that's where the gardening and the people getting back into doing it themselves is going to turn all that around.
Yeah, it would. It certainly would.
And co-oping. So speaking of co-oping, this is my latest concept. And we've actually started it this year. It was supposed to start last year, but that didn't happen. The thought did. So anyway, I guess you got to think it first, right? What we're doing, this is our next cool step, okay? So I got a problem with it too, so I'm putting the word out there. Maybe you guys can put the word out there too, is we're doing hemp communities. And what I mean by that is we know that there's like at least 50,000 uses for hemp. And I will tell you that even locally, there's a, in fact, it was the same guy that I was telling you that cried because he was out of pain and he's 30 years old. His family owns a furniture factory. And they try to use hemp as much as they can, but because they have to import it from Canada, and Canada, which has been growing it for 10 years, is always in the deficit. They can never provide enough for all the demands. Okay, so they always run out of hemp and have to go back to their other stuff. Well, I'm looking around and going, okay, in my area, I live in a very depressed area. About 30% of the people are out of work. And a lot of those people on the streets are veterans, which breaks my heart. So what I'm doing is I'm going to gather up, instead of a handout, I'm going to do a hand up. I'm going to gather up some of the people that maybe have some mental challenges, some of the people that are homeless, some of these veterans are out of work, or whoever wants to step up and go, okay, here's this plot of land. I'm going to show you how to build your own house that the second you build it will be 65% off-grid, okay? And we're going to make it even more off-grid with using things like geothermal and some solar and some water reclamation, and we're going to be as off-grid as we can, and then you guys are going to grow the hemp and provide it for industry, and then after you get yourself all situated and you got your crops coming back and doing everything that you can for harvesting and getting this raw material out to the planet, then we'll open up the next community. So that's my humanitarian project with the Hospitars. And we've already got about 2,000 acres committed to growing. But guess what my problem is? Finding seeds. I just paid. This is crazy. We had to get them from Colorado, and she would not put them in the mail, even though I explained she could legally do that. $1,000 for 1,000 seeds. Now, come on. So I've got other people looking. And it looks like I'm going to be able to maybe get enough seeds to do a couple acres at best. So what we're probably going to end up doing is using the first couple rounds just to collect. I mean, obviously we'll use the fiber and whatever is there, but what are you going to, you know, a couple acres worth of fiber is pretty much nothing. But we're going to gather the seeds so we can, you know, propagate and then move on with our growing. I've got some people down in Florida right now looking around, but the seeds are the problem, you guys. Wow. Nobody wants to import them. You know, it's a hassle to get them brought into the United States from Europe or from Canada. And, you know, if you can have them in Colorado, but you can't send them out of the state. You know, it's just so crazy.
Wow. That's nuts. That really is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. You can have the hemp product, but you can't grow it yourself. I mean, it's, you know, and if you do the math and you go backward, it's about the money, because when they made all the cannabis and hemp illegal, if you do a history back, it was because, well, I mean, come on, you know that as good as not better than I do. It was about all these industries. Yeah, I mean, that was all about the oil industry. I mean, come on, Henry Ford's car was made out of hemp and ran off of hemp oil. They already knew. It was, that crop is so cheap to grow, so cheap to harvest, and so cheap to, you know, prepare and process. You know, and it was basically they wanted to cut down trees and grow cotton and, you know, have petrochemicals sucked out of the earth, and, you know, and that's where we're at right now. So that's the problem. Follow the money. But they can't stop it. That's the beautiful thing. Is even with all that, it's taken what has it been, about 100 years? There I go with my math again. About 100 years, hasn't it been?
70-something, yeah.
Yeah.
Early
30s. It's coming back around. They can't stop it.
Yeah.
What's that?
The early 30s.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really funny when you take a look. There's this really great book out there. I love it because Ed Rosenthal is great. But, you know, you have to have a lot of tenacity to get through that book, and it's very detailed. And if you really want to grow, and it's – I mean, he just takes it to outer space and back a couple times. But if you take a look at – there's something called the Little Black Book, and it's been revised. I love it because it's a very quick read, and it shows you the history – of how it got to where it is, and then it shows you, you know, how to do, it's also how to do your basic type of stuff. I mean, obviously, they're not going to get everything in this. I mean, it's literally, I think it's about like 3 inches long and about 2 inches wide and about a half an inch thick. But they even get into things like, oh, yeah, they want to say, you know, because I have a lot of people say, well, what about the problem if you psychoactivate your cannabis and schizophrenia? And I'm like, oh, This was in that book. I loved it. It was really cool. It said, no. It said, the research shows that if you have a propensity towards schizophrenia, the cannabis will actually slow down your getting it. So it's the opposite. So then the other big myth that's out there, it looks something like, it's the doorway drug. And so I have to laugh at this. So it's the doorway to what? Doing Vicodin? So let's just forget about using cannabis as the doorway. Let's just put you on Vicodin. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just like so silly. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah. But there is, it's not a doorway drug. In fact, they took the bodies of evidence when the Nixons came out with Just Say No. Or that was Mrs. Reagan, I think, actually. I can't remember, but it was something like
Reagan.
That. And Just Say No. Was it Reagan? Yeah.
Yep.
And Just Say No. And if you take a look at the research, I mean, it shows that when the cannabis was taken away from people, they actually did the other drugs. When the cannabis was there, they did not do the drinking and the cocaine and the heroin. They didn't do it. And you know cocaine is epidemic right now. Speaking of that, this is really a must. Oh, I'm so glad I just thought of this, you guys. So in our area, heroin, I mean, there's nine-year-olds doing it. It's awful. It's just awful. We actually have a way that we're taking people off of their Oxycontin and their pain pills and their whatever addiction they had. I mean, Suboxone is the worst thing there is. I mean, at least when you're on heroin, and you got nine-year-olds doing heroin here, addicted. You know, so they have to go to the street to get that. So, yeah, methadone, I can see it keeps people off the street, but the problem with the methadone, it's just like 100 times more toxic. It just really destroys tissue so quick. You will die from methadone use faster than heroin. So
wow.
Now they came up with a new drug. Yeah. Now they come up with a new drug, Suboxone, which is 100 times worse than methadone. And it's an arm wrestling match of who gets first place. Benzos, which would be like your Xanax and your Valium, which destroy brain tissue faster than anything I've seen besides Suboxone. So we have these people that come in, and they have these addictions. We can get people through their addiction, pain-free, very few side effects. They don't even have to lay down or get off their feet in about 3 to 6 days using something called kratom. Now, kratom is an evergreen tea that comes from like the Malaysian, Vietnamese, those type of areas, and it is a natural opiate. It's called a mu opiate. So what's cool about this is most things, like heroin, you have to continually do more because the body builds more receptor sites and you become immune to it and you just don't. Same thing with cannabis if you overuse it. If you don't control the amount of time between your doses, you'll get to the point where you continually have to use more. It can be that way for a lot of things, even natural, caffeine, whatever may be the case, things that aren't necessarily so bad. But with the opiates, it really is a dominating factor. So what we can do, what's so cool with this mu opiate, with this kratom, is we can actually take people off. We had a nurse that came in that said, God, I'm so glad you carry this. She goes, I've been looking for it everywhere. She goes, I did some research. I've been doing a blog talk with somebody over in Europe that they specialize in taking people off the Suboxone. She started off with doing about 12 grams every 4 hours. Within 3 days, she was down to like 6 grams every 4 hours. Within another 3 days, she was down to like 3 grams every 4 hours. And now we're about 2.5 weeks later, and she's doing like 3 grams 2 to 3 times a day, and she's totally off of it. So it went the opposite way that you'd expect an opiate to go. She actually, her body naturally titrated down to the amount that it needed. She had no withdrawals. She didn't get sick. She didn't get shaky. Nothing happened. It was the smoothest withdrawal I've ever seen, and we've been doing that with a lot of the heroin and opiate addicts. It's amazing. And so for controlling pain, remember we're talking about synergy. You know, you put somebody on some cannabis and some kratom and some cod liver oil, and you're gonna lick a lot of people's problems right there when it comes to the pain. Pretty amazing stuff.
I'll be darned.
It's an evergreen tree from the Asian countries. And the thing was when the corporatocracy, which if you've never heard of John Perkins and corporatocracy, everybody needs to do their homework on that.
Oh, yeah.
He was an economic hitman. Yeah, he was an economic hitman, and he explained how things actually works. If you've never had any sort of indoctrination into these type of insights, it'll blow your mind. In fact, you'll just think, I don't even know if you'll be able to comprehend it. But people like you, me, you know, all the folks on the line, we have a pretty good idea of this kind of stuff. So when you look at it, it just kind of connects all the dots really nicely. I think it's just a great adjunct to any place you may be. We're trying to get the whole picture. I think he puts the whole picture together nicely. And one of the things that happened, like in Vietnam, the reason why Vietnam and all that war, believe it or not, was about the opium trade. And what they did is they went in there and they tried to cut down all the kratom. But it grows, it proliferates so wonderfully, thank God. They could not destroy all the forest of the kratom. But that's because they were forcing Vietnam and some of these countries to be the biggest opium traders into the United States for heroin.
Wow.
So that's why kratom kind of fell off the map back in the 60s. And now it's just now regaining because, you know, Vietnam now has open sanctions for international trade and Malaysia and a lot of those countries, and they're able to get this particular plant over to us. We're trying to, once again, in our repertoire, trying to cultivate it here now as well because of its mu opiate and for cancer and everything. It's just phenomenal. You know, those opiate receptors make you feel so good, and they really help with the pain, and it's nice to not be addicted. You know, you can miss a dose or, you know, miss a couple of days, and you may be in pain, but you're not like, you don't have to have it. You're not, you know, going out and prostituting yourself to get it, you know?
Yeah.
Huh. Pretty cool stuff.
So is Kratom, okay, it's obviously being imported because you're helping people with it.
Yeah, we have to import at this point because there is nobody really. I mean, it is those countries in that area that it's, you know, it's specific to, and you know we're so good with horticulture, we know how to transplant and make things thrive. But that's something that nobody's really working on. That's also part of our hemp community. It's not just going to be hemp. Hemp is going to be the main emphasis because we can already go into existing manufacturing and get rid of all the stuff that's destroying the planet immediately for cheaper, so that's going to be a really easy sale. But it's also about bringing plants in that we need for health and healing, like the cannabis and the kratom and the psilocybin mushrooms and the peyote, you know, and making them available for people that maybe could not have gotten them otherwise. So that's also part of the, you know, hemp community, so to speak.
Yeah. Outstanding.
Self-sustaining communities, yeah. And believe it or not, it's the young kids that are stepping up and really getting it and really doing the work. You know, I'm 55, you know. I mean, I'm already working so many hours a week. I'm like, okay, look, I will back you. I will help you. I will give you the inroads. But we got to have a bigger team on this. And, you know, the kids are amazing. They're just jumping on board and just going for it. It's so cool.
Wow. Oh, that's super. So you're in Ohio. Northwest corner.
Yes, sir.
And up in the steel belt. And
yep.
Or the rust belt.
Yeah, something like that. Actually,
yeah.
I think they call us the black swamp. We're actually the mold belt. We have the highest levels of aspergillus and penicillium than anywhere in the world. There's a couple places that can compete with us, but no one's going to beat us. And I got the sickness to prove it.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, they dug drainage ditches around Toledo, and that's why we're not a swamp anymore. We're actually a black swamp. They call us Frog Town. Reebeat. See, I even sound like a frog. I've been living here so damn long.
Well, about 3 nights ago, my wife, we live in a small, you know, 1,000-square-foot manufactured home, and she got up and looked down, check the cat water. You know, we got a couple of cats, and she saw something in the water dish, and she didn't have her glasses on, and she thought, well, that's a funny looking turd. It looks like a frog. And she thought, sure enough, one of the cats apparently had brought a frog in, and this thing was a good three and a half, four inches, and so, oh, you know, naturally, you know, lots of furor going on. Grab it. And, you know, usually what we'll do is we'll get one of those little, you know, long distance reachers, and because the cats also bring in chipmunks. But the frog.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at Dad. Look at the toy that I found. This is so much fun. Please let me play with this.
Oh, yeah. But I knew from childhood the only way we're getting that frog out of there is for me to grab it the first time, right, and get it out of the house, and I did, and I've got pretty quick reflexes, and And but that damn thing, boy, it squirmed to get out of my hand. I got a big hand. And well, they,
are you
cats,
bragging now? Are you?
Yeah. And these cats. Oh my gosh. They're
yeah,
fun.
It's it. You do have to worry about some of those frogs, though. You know, you do.
Yeah,
they can actually be. We really try to keep the frogs away from our dogs because they can be big problems.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Linda had one cat that ate a lizard and damn near killed him. And he almost didn't survive the effects to his brain, and but pulled through it. And but kind of the rest of his life, he kind of walked with his head kind of cocked to the left a little bit, you know, and a little.
Yeah. Well, you know, we work a lot with animals too, and I got to tell you, you know, for all you pet lovers out there, the cannabinoids is a really great match with animals and their sicknesses. We get fantastic results. I actually had one of my babies, our first girl that we had, our Alaskan Malamute from the ancient Malamute line, which is like 3,000 years old. She's just a beauty. And she ended up contracting a very aggressive cancer where they said, you know, 2 weeks to live, you better get her on the chemo and all this. And we started doing CBDs. I mean, we did an arsenal of stuff. It's never just one thing. I mean, it was a huge arsenal. But the cannabinoids, when we added those in, played an instrumental part with healing her and getting rid of this cancer that she had. Really wonderful.
Oh,
so for horses, yeah, we've used it on the horses where we actually will just get the raw plant, and they love to eat the plants. They will, you know, if you have cannabis or hemp out in your field, you're going to see that the animals really are attracted to this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. They know.
What's
oh,
that?
Yeah,
it makes sense. They know. That's their animal radar, spirit radar, and they just go over there and grab a hold of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, this stuff is a weed. I mean, that's the reason why it was called weed. It really is a weed. I mean, this stuff grows so easily. It's not even hard to grow. Now, if you're looking for specific medicinal effects, obviously, you know, you want a little bit more of a controlled environment. But honestly, the plants that grow outside are the best ones. I mean, nobody's going to beat nature. My whole concern right now with planet Earth, though, to be honest with you, are these chemtrails and what they're dumping and Fukushima coming across. And now in our area, we got Davis Bessie, which is right down the street, which is a nuclear power plant, and she's been blowing her top a few times, and we're all suffering because of it, you know, and that's my concern. So I've got this group that I'm working with, and this is what we're probably going to do with all of our hemp and outdoor stuff, where we have this, they're called airscapes, and they're these structures that you can build that will actually cover, you know, acres and acres of farmland. So it'll protect the chemtrails from coming through, but it does not block any of the sun's rays. And I'm just thinking, and the other thing that I have a concern for is I'm really hoping that anybody that grows anything that's heirloom or that is, you know, a really truly non-genetically modified seed because of all the GMOs that are, you know, in Europe, if you grow a GMO field, they'll just burn it down because they know that the cross-pollinization is such a problem, that I hope people are also doing some seed vaults because that's going to be critical to cleaning up this planet. I just know and feel in my heart.
Yeah.
But within the next couple years, everything's going to transition into that golden era. There's too many people awake right now, and once you reach that 2% collective consciousness jumps, and what we're going to need ways to keep those seeds that are really healthy intact with seed vaults. And Switzerland, is it Switzerland? Switzerland?
No, it's up in Norway,
Australia,
Sweden, the one you're talking about.
It's a place.
The Arctic Circle.
It's cool.
Yeah, they've got huge seed vaults, and they're
doing a great
job with that. Yeah,
it's
really
a place,
important.
It's a place called Svalbard, Spitsbergen. And if you've ever seen the very popular TV show right now, I guess it's playing on AMC. Hang on a second. Fortitude. Fortitude is filmed up where the European Union's got their huge seed vault up there. And
that's exactly what I'm talking about.
It's not really Norway. It's internationalized area. And but it's kind of under the protectorate of Norway.
But it's
thing
huge.
Is, though,
I mean,
too,
it's
is
amazing.
The,
yeah.
The circle.
Plants and seeds and everything, actually. If our planet's magnetic fields and core continue to change, and if we go into a what you call a full magnetic reversal of the
magnetic
field.
Well, we've already done that. We've already done that. We've already shifted our poles. We've already done that.
Well, no, we would see a little bit more than what we've seen yet, because the our shields would completely drop, and then you would get enough radiation to cause massive genetic mutation to the seeds and stuff. So you need something that can withstand that type of thing also. And I would bet money that those guys, that seed vault, especially what up in Sweden and Norway up there in the Arctic Circle, the location tells you two things. One is they've probably built that to withstand massive amounts of radiation, natural,
yes,
coming,
yes,
into the Earth.
Yes.
And the second thing is that area, as far as ocean flooding and other types of stuff, that probably is going to be a little bit more stable.
I agree.
But here's the reason they picked that location.
Yeah. Here's a website everybody needs to go to. This guy is a flipping genius. It's called Suspicious Observers, but the O is actually a zero, the number zero. Suspicious Observers. And he debunks everything about global warming. He shows how we are actually getting solar flares, CMEs, coronal mass ejections. The one that hit 3 weeks ago, if it would have hit on the front side of the sun, we would be in the ice age. And so he also shows how we've already moved through zero point, and we're actually going back the other direction with Schumann frequencies and with where the North Pole has been. See, for the last 15 years, the North Pole, you know, airports they have,
right,
to calibrate, has been jumping around so much. And he actually tracks all this, and he actually tracks it out through the solar system. And here's what I find, and this was one of my lectures at that last convention I was just at, where I was a keynote speaker for Microcurrent as second responders. And that is that when you take a look at all these frequencies that are hitting us right now, you know, if you would have, it would have been back in the 60s and 70s when we were kids, we're like, oh my God, we have a solar flare, don't go outside. But sometimes we get 36 solar flares in a day. What those are, is those are actually gamma rays. So let's now go back to the neurosciences. When you take a look at the neurosciences, the gamma rays are something that we have not been able to critically attune to, feed back into the system, because it looks like artifact. So we have not perfected that yet. But the gamma rays are actually the rays that take you into spiritual enlightenment. And it is something that the sun is giving us. So what's happened is, if you take a look at the collective consciousness grid, the information living library that's around the planet, the Akashic records, if you go back into like biblical times, that's what they called it, you know, when they were stoning Mary and Jesus gets down in the stand and starts writing and says, "Thou shalt not throw stones." He was tapping into the Akashic records, which is the living library of all information on planet Earth. And so, like, if you're an artist and you're in your creative zone, or if you're a writer and you got a writer's block, it means you're not able to tap into this information grid. And it, you know, the 100 monkey theory proves it, and it looks like about once 2% of the population has a certain thought intact, it jumps the rest of the population up. Well, we have expanded our consciousness out so far at this point that we are actually at not just global consciousness, but we are actually moving into interplanetary and galactic consciousness. And it's because of the gamma rays that are coming from the sun that's allowing us to do that. So we actually are getting hit by them, but the mechanisms of action, which we thought we understood, are not what we thought they were going to be. And that's what's very interesting. So when you take a look at, you know, if you go on National Geographic's website, you can see every single time that the planet Earth has taken a polar shift. It's very easy to show. They have charts and graphs, and they show you how they mark it. It's something that the planet has done. It does about every 36,000 years. But what's interesting about this one is that this is the only time that it's an all or nothing. It's either all of us are going to survive this or none of us are. And it comes down to how well attuned we are into that collective consciousness, or at this point, the galactic consciousness grid. And guess what? It's happening. The placebo effect, most people aren't aware of this. But if you're going to pass a pharmaceutical drug through for FDA approval, you have to be better than the placebo. The placebo effect at that point in time when they set up those standards was about 30%, which means that 30% of the time they could give you a sugar pill and it had the same effect as the pharmaceutical drug. So in order for a pharmaceutical drug to get its stamp of approval, it had to be 31% better. It had to be 1% better than a placebo. So I'd rather take two Skittles and tell you to take two Skittles and call me in the morning. I mean, it'd be a lot safer, no side effects, seriously. But the placebo effect is so underlooked by medical research now that they just ignore it because the collective consciousness grid has expanded so far and human consciousness has expanded so far that the placebo effect, depending on where you're at on the planet and where magnetic north is at the time and where the Schumann frequency is at, because we have multiple Schumann frequencies right now, is that you can actually see the placebo effect sometimes being as high as 60%.
Yeah, they're
so,
having
once again,
I mean, because some of the drugs, they require it has to be better than the placebo at a certain point.
And that's why they're having problems.
They're having problems passing
some
drugs right now because the placebo effect is so high.
That's where the problem's at right now. So they're trying to now, what they're doing, their first step for deciding how the FDA is going to approve a drug now is they just absolutely 100% ignore the placebo effect, which is an atrocity at best. But what I like about it is it shows that how powerful we are actually becoming from a spiritual and from a, evolutionary standpoint is they, no matter how hard, this is what I love, and that's why I know we're really close to the breakthrough, taking that galactic jump into consciousness, is because when you see the placebo effect take that type of quantum jump, okay, up to as high as 60%, that means that they can't stop us no matter how hard they try. They keep coming up, trying to come up with new ways to stop us from being conscious. And here's the thing. If you take a look at, and this was my dad's friend. My dad financed this film. If you go to YouTube and you go to Generation RX, and it shows how at that point it was Ritalin, and now they have, the Adderall and all the other things. And it shows how it actually blocks the frontal lobe from bringing in new information, which is where consciousness exists as far as from a brain perspective. And they intentionally did that to try to dummy us down. And now they're coming up with these new ways to teach. And the other thing that most people don't take a look at is when you watch television prior to like the 90s, everything was kind of done in real time, and now it's just really quick clips. There was actually a teacher that did research on that and showed she ended up being a very highly acclaimed information gatherer for the neuroscientists that showed that those quick clips, commercials, and movies stop the young kids' brains from developing properly. They will never be able to bring in conscious information, no matter how hard they try. And all these different angles, and I can cite millions of different ways that they try to do this, they can't stop us. If that doesn't tell you about the tenacity of the human soul and where we're really heading, I don't know what else to say,
Well, we're in the planet's responding too, because the if you go back and look, I think it was about we went through the Galactic Center thing in 1998, and right as that was happening, they were also seeing the planet change, and one of the changes was they noticed that the all of a sudden there was a couple new belts popping up in the Van Allen magnetic fields. A new one just popped out of nowhere. And then the next thing around, I think it was 2002, 2003, they started saying, well, we're seeing some stuff appear here. And it caught my attention. It was like argon, xenon, but they were all, almost everything was an inert or noble gas. And that's that. Now a lot of people, it's kind of interesting, but it caught my attention because I.
Because that was the basis of all Tesla's work, wasn't it? That's what he worked with.
Well, if you go back and look at a man called Walter Russell, and he did a periodic table of elements that was in a spiral form, and how they were
Fibonacci,
all.
That's Fibonacci sequencing. Yeah, that's all life is based on that.
But what was interesting about him was he specifically said that the. The inert and noble gases were special intersection points where Creator came in and through consciousness. I forget his exact words, the way he said it, but it was something like that, So it was so when I'm reading this thing, I'm going, whoa, something's interesting going up here.
That is cool.
And it also goes back to what you were talking about earlier. We were talking about the quantum and all that because some of the things that you're doing in the frequency and the quantum, and you combine this with consciousness, and you could take your work and people that are working with you, and you could apply this up into the grid of the Earth, the magnetic field and the grid of the Earth, and how we are linked to it, because the frequency you're mentioning.
Absolutely. No, you're
like
right on point.
Beta,
yes, that's
and
what
the
I'm
delta,
saying. Yes. Yes.
What is it? Which one's at 4.0? That's the theta, right?
That's Theta. Theta is 4.0,
yeah.
Yep.
And it, if I remember right, that also turns out to be where that range
where you get connected. That's where you get connected to the planetary grid.
Spiritual stuff.
Well, that's okay, okay. Okay, let me just delve into that a little bit further, and I want to hear the rest of what you're going to say, but I got to add in right here because this is so
okay.
Cool. So, yeah, what we have is we actually have in our place something called a theta chair. And what it is there's something called a vestibular response. A vestibular response can be shown very simply. Pick your leg up and how long can you stand on one leg. That will tell you how well your autonomic nervous system is controlled by the vestibular response is actually working.
Oh, sorry about that.
Am I okay?
Yeah,
am
you're,
I okay?
You're okay. That's okay.
Okay,
sorry about
so,
that. Yeah,
so,
off,
yeah, no, that's okay. I just didn't know if I was done or not. I didn't know if you were telling me I was talking too much as usual, but anyway. Anyway, so what ends up happening is on this chair, what it does is it puts you, it gyroscopes your whole entire body. And we've proven that the best way to regenerate brain tissue is with gravity. Okay, so we do that, and then we hook up the lights, the photolight stem, where we control the hertz with theta. So we're going to do between 4 and 8 hertz cycles per second, and we're going to use the color blue with the LED lights that flash, you know, on your eyes at 4 to 8 cycles per second, and then we move you in a gyroscopic effect through gravity so we can regenerate and retrain the vestibular response, being dizzy, you know, having lack of balance. You see when older people, that's why they fall. We see that this is a problem. So what we do is we put you into theta. We use neurolinguistics programming, which is also a form of theta training, binaural beats, and we put this all together on the chair, and we retrain this vestibular response. So when you get into theta, theta is when I was saying, you know, that somebody is in their writer's groove versus that they're not. They're,
right.
That's being able to tap into theta. When someone can get into theta, they're automatically tuned into collective consciousness, planetary. But the thing that we're seeing now, which is so interesting, is, yeah, the planetary consciousness is really huge and powerful and instrumental, and it's what's going to accelerate the planet. But we're also bringing in gamma right now, which is making us become galactic, and that's why we're seeing the huge jumps in consciousness, like with the placebo effect and everything we're doing. So, yeah, tell me more about this now. You got me excited.
Hold on just a second. There?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Blue Water, I think we dumped audio on the website on Blog Talk. Did it stop? Yeah, I think Blog Talk stopped.
Well, even if it did, I'm recording.
Get the archive? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and whatever Blog Talk doesn't get. So, yeah, go ahead and just take the time. No problem.
Well, the idea was that, you know, you can take this information, and some of the people are probably somewhat doing it already, but her work and other people she works with, they can take some of these concepts, and one of the things you can do is we can take the teaching and learning and healing up into that level. So instead of like writing a book or making a DVD or a website, you could still do that. But the other thing you can do is you can take this knowledge and information that's wanting to be shared and dump it into the human Earth holographic grid network.
Right, the grid. Absolutely, yes.
And
yes.
Teach and get to people this way, because we're reaching the point right now,
yes,
where we got
enough
people.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Yes,
the collective
consciousness
grid.
Do
that,
yes.
And they unify,
yes,
together with this intention. And they can put it out to everybody else.
Okay,
and this,
yes,
is where
that's
the
exactly what I'm
start
talking about.
Happening,
yes,
really fast.
Yeah.
That's where we push the envelope, and we take it beyond just book and internet and that communication, and we take it to the next level. We go on to the spirit level, and we communicate in the grid and dump this information in it for the benefit of everybody else and bring them up to speed pretty quickly. And
okay, so there's this other body of research I have to bring in at this point that's going to coincide with what you're saying. And I think it is the easiest, simplest way to get people to understand the power of themselves. Every day, you know, I mean, we're not like Magneto Man on X-Men, where, you know, he moves metal. But Thuris Magneto. My husband's correcting me. Magneto. I'm terrible with names. but what we can do is we can wake up every day and make a choice of whether we're going to be positive and happy or miserable in our misery. And
right.
Why is that important? Because there's something called heart math or heart rate variability, which is really catching on. And what it is, I have a couple different ways that we do this. One way is we have this computer where you clip something on your finger or your ear, and it's going to measure your heart rate. And then you learn with your mind and with your breath to control your heart rate so that you see a nice, smooth, even sine wave. And that's called that you're in a coherent, very,
right.
It's called love. So what we have stations set up all around the world and satellites that actually measure this. This is actually a study that's been going on for years that I've been participating in, that I can actually measure your heart out in space. And here's the thing. If you live in love, it changes everything. If you live in fear, you can't even get into the love. And so through heart rate coherence, through balancing out just your heart rate, through breath and thought, you can get into the love factor, and that opens up that pathway by which to be in that grid all the time. So very simple exercise, very simple way to control. You get a feedback mechanism to let you know when you are in that state and when you're not. So you can consciously control that state through breath and through a feedback system to see where your heart's at. And it's called heart rate coherence. It's very, very powerful. The company is called HeartMath. They have devices. You know about HeartMath?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
Dan HeartMath Winter, right?
Well, that I actually got it mainly through Greg Braden.
Greg Braden.
He wrote a book called
Dan
Fractal
Winter,
Time.
I think, the one that runs it.
Yeah, and he wrote a book called Fractal Time, and I've studied with him a lot, and this is a group that does this, and they actually have stations set up around the planet that amplify this frequency, so everybody at a certain time of the day gets into this, and they jump up. They jump us up into that grid so that we're, and again, I believe that's why, due to work like what Greg Braden and his group are doing with this heart rate variability, I believe that that's why that they're jumping, you know, the placebo effect and these things that you're talking about are changing is because we're supposed to be connected to them. If you look at indigenous cultures, the Australians, ESP, telepathy, understanding what medicine, putting your hands on somebody and healing them, what plants to use, this is something that's supposed to be innate. It's supposed to be part of our innate wisdom that has been stripped from us because, you know, making the dollar and, you know, plugging into the grid and, you know, being part of the matrix. And the thing is as hard as they've tried to stop all that, that's one thing I like about John Perkins and his corporatocracy is he's realized the destruction, but at the same time, what he's doing is he's teaching classes with indigenous cultures about how to get back reconnected. This is something that's supposed to be there. You know, we use things like earthing pads. You can put the sheet on your bed because, you know, all of us walk around with rubber-soled shoes, so none of us are grounding out during the day. There's a reason why all your nerves end up on the bottom of your feet. You're supposed to walk around in leather-soled shoes or barefoot outside, and then you get from Mother Earth this electron transfer that's so important for health, and they call it grounding. Everybody's heard of grounding before. But this company is called Earthing, and what they do is they've created products, so at least while you're sleeping at night, you're downloading Mother Earth into your body. And I will tell you, I've had chronic hypertrophic tonsils since I've been probably about 6 years old. They've just always been swollen. I had strep throat every year for like till I was 21. And I will tell you, 1 week of sleeping on this earthing pad, my tonsils went down. And with everything that I do and everything that I know and how long I've been into this, to have that profound of a change, it has to tell you how powerful Mother Earth is and what she can give you. So this earthing and this grounding, and I sell all those products at cost, just cover my delivery and my shipping out to you. I have all my tables where practitioners work. They have to ground out and put one of these bands on. All the patients / seekers that come through, they put these on because that's the way to ground down into that. Then if I can teach them the heart rate variability, we're giving people tools by which to go home to make this, what you're talking about, happen very easily and quietly and gently, which is where the biggest healing comes from. It's got to be something gentle and non-obtrusive. You know, you can't bang somebody over the head with it. It has to just be, you know, through natural processes that we get this. And that's also why I like the quantum computers is because we're talking cell talk. We're getting all the cells to communicate together and work together as a community, which is what I see what's happening on the planet. Everybody's learning, you know, their own individual place and how we all work together as opposed to, you know, corporations where, you know, it's all about the money. And they can't stop it. We can see, no matter how hard they try, they're not stopping this stuff from happening.
No, that's not possible. It's going to happen. Just inevitable. You know, it's
right.
Just the way things are built. You know, so
exactly.
The way Creator made things, and you either work with Creator or you don't.
Exactly.
Well, we probably ought to run along, folks.
Okay.
And, yeah, we can run over a little bit, but I'll make sure. Yeah, I noticed that Blog Talk, usually when you hit the announce time, there's an REC here. And anyway, I'll take care of it, make sure it all gets uploaded, okay?
Hey, Blair, Charmaine, I'd like to get a number. There's something else I want to talk to her about.
Sure.
Yeah. You could let me give you my phone number. Okay.
Hold on a second. I gotta get something to write with here.
Okay.
I lost my pen here. Okay, I think I got something here. All right.
So 419-841.
Huh?
841.
Okay.
4471.
All right.
That's my home phone number. I'm usually home in the mornings and the evenings, and then otherwise I will be at this number. 419-720-2972.
Okay.
Extension 1.
All right.
Yeah,
I'd love to talk to you more about this. That was cool. That was cool, the direction this took tonight. That was really fun. Thank you so much, guys.
Absolutely. And this has been another edition of Aqualiva Radio, and we'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.
Join us.
Good night.
Okay,
learn
good
how
night.
To legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Blue Otter. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho.
Aho.